Seems like there's never a shortage of folks who are either in the process of or just been getting married. We've all been involved to one degree or another at one time or another. It seems as though they always want to set a date. Well, we know that the date and the wedding is a point in time that was preceded by a lot of effort. Finding the right spouse could possibly have taken up the most time in preparation. Tradition usually dictates who takes care of the various tasks and how the whole process marches along until the bride marches down the aisle. When all is said and done, every detail has to be performed properly. All of the services arranged for, all the preparations made for this date to be met and to come off as expected. When it all comes together, the people, the venue, be it church, synagogue, whatever the venue, the vows exchanged, the confusion, the rushing about, the last minute details that were inevitably taken care of, two lives are joined together. Was it all worth it? Of course it was. It was worth it. The marriage union is an ordinance given by Yahweh that was meant for man to enjoy and grow and develop a better understanding of our place in the universe. The commitment made in marriage, the commitment that we honor and cherish, is a perfect example for us. It's a way to understand the commitment and preparation that's required of Yahweh's people in preparing to spend an eternity in His presence. Let's turn to Revelation chapter 19. Starting with verse 7, where it says, "Let us rejoice and be glad and give the glory to Him, for the marriage of the Lamb has come, and His bride has made herself ready. It was given to her to clothe herself in fine linen, bright and clean. For the fine linen is the righteous acts of the saints. Then he said to me, 'Write, blessed are those who are invited to the marriage supper of the Lamb.' And he said to me, 'These are the true words of Yahweh.' Then I fell at his feet to worship him. But he said to me, 'Do not do that. I am a fellow servant of yours, and your brethren who hold the testimony of Yahshua. Worship Yahweh, for the testimony of Yahshua is the spirit of prophecy.'" The angels of Yahweh proclaimed their rejoicing at the wedding of the Lamb, and they speak of the bride that has made herself ready. The Bible is filled with analogies and examples of conduct so that we can know what is good and acceptable. Marriage is the way that we refer to the soon coming union of Yahshua and His bride. And just as we would make painstaking preparation for our earthly wedding, so also we should make these preparations for our eternal marriage. Even more so, the angels of heaven will sing songs of rejoicing when Master Yeshua meets his bride that has made herself ready. The scriptures talk about the wedding. The scriptures talk about weddings and marriage. Marriage appears to be an important institution related to an understanding of our relationship with Yahweh Elohim. But you know, our modern day version of weddings and marriages has come a long way from the biblical model. I dare say, if we held to a biblical model of marriage, the divorce rate would not be over 50%. Elohim would not have given us an institution that had a failure rate that high. So what is the difference? Well, let's take a look at what marriage was like when Yeshua was with his disciples. Looking at marriage in the context of Hebrew custom and society makes the analogy come alive, and it makes a great deal of sense to our Western sensibilities and mentality. In about the year 30 CE, Common Era, the Hebrew custom of marriage went, from what I've studied, went something like this. All Hebrews were assumed to marry based on the premise that mankind was created and placed on this planet by Yahweh to populate it and to take care of it. The usual age of marriage was sometime during the teen years. The man at that age was bent on finding a suitable partner, but only after demonstrating to his father that he had the skills and abilities to support a wife. When a suitable partner was found, sometimes a third party would intervene on behalf of the bride or the groom. The young man went to the house of the intended bride and asked to speak to the girl's father. The bride-to-be was not included in these discussions. The purpose of the discussion was to negotiate a price that would be paid for the bride. Typically, the bridegroom would offer a price of about 200 zuz. You may ask what 200 zuz is. It's about $40 in modern currency. And that was for a common bride. When an agreement had been met, the bridegroom and the bride's father would construct a ketubah. This is a written contract that details the bride price and other contractual arrangements for the marriage to take place. This tradition continues to today. The ketubah protects the bride from hasty divorces and other breaches of the marriage contract. The marriage contract was entrusted to the bride so that she may keep the record of the transaction. When the ketubah was finished, the bride was brought into the presence of her father and the bridegroom. The bride was informed of the conditions of the ketubah, and it was given to her. Having done this, the bride's father poured a cup of wine, and both the bridegroom and the bride drank from the cup to seal the contract. But not automatically. The bride had the ketubah and the wine. She carefully considered the contract. She looked over the groom. You know, there is a distinct possibility that she may never have seen the groom before this moment. The wine was poured into one of the household's ceremonial cups, the cup of redemption. This was indeed a serious decision. When the bride drank the cup, the negotiations were finished. The bridegroom left his bride with her father and returned to his father's house. When the bridegroom returned home, he began to prepare an apartment for his bride and himself to occupy. After a period of time, the bridegroom returned to claim his bride. The bride did not know when to expect the bridegroom, so in the interim, she faithfully waited and prepared for his return. During this time, she probably made ready her possessions, attended to the affairs that would benefit her marriage, memorized the ketubah, and looked for signs that indicated that her husband was coming. At the time when the bridegroom returned, an attendant would accompany the bridegroom and announce in advance that the bridegroom was coming, and the bride would know in hearing this to make haste and arise to meet her husband. Then they would announce to all who could hear that the marriage was complete and that they would be returning to the newly built apartment at the bridegroom's father's house. Like the custom of the time, so is the example that Yahshua left us to ponder. For example, Yahshua identified his intended bride, Israel. And he came to earth to negotiate a bride price. Why he found us worthy to be his bride, well, I'm just thankful that he did. He offered the bride price and paid for it on the stake. This is recorded in 1 Corinthians 6:20. If we could turn there. First Corinthians 6:20, where it says, "For you have been bought with a price, therefore glorify Yahweh in your body." It was a price that the bridegroom was willing to pay because he loved his bride. During Passover, Yahshua instituted a memorial in his remembrance. The number 4 is prevalent in the Passover Seder. There are 4 questions, 4 sons, 4 cups of wine. The 4 cups represent the 4 divine promises of Exodus 6, 6 and 7. Let's turn to Exodus 6. Verses 6 and 7. Where it says, excuse me. It doesn't say excuse me. "Say therefore to the sons of Israel, I am Yahweh, and I will bring you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians, and I will deliver you from their bondage. I will also redeem you with an outstretched arm and with great judgments. Then I will take you for my people, and I will be your Elohim, and you shall know that I am Yahweh, your Elohim, who brought you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians." It's a very powerful passage. And the four promises that are remembered here was the promise that I will free you from the burdens of the Egyptians. They were freed. I will deliver you from their bondage. They're delivered. I will redeem you, and I will make you my people. The fourth cup is not used in this Seder, as I understand it. This cup is Elijah's cup, and it's set out for Elijah. Since the memorial was taken at the end of the meal, the cup used at the time of the memorial was the cup of redemption, the third cup. As I understand Hebrew traditions, they do not use special implements for each feast day or special time. When the use of cups is concerned, they only use the four cups from Passover for every special occasion. However, in each special occasion, they make use of a specific cup according to the four divine promises. Concerning the sealing of the Hebrew marriage contract, there is the cup. That cup is the same cup as the third cup of Passover, the cup of redemption. You see, when the bride drank from the cup, the bride and groom were considered married. So when Yahshua proclaimed that we should drink this cup, he was sealing our marriage and our redemption. After the memorial, Yahshua departed from the faithful to pay the bride price. After having paid the price, just as in the Hebrew wedding example, he returned to his father's house to prepare an apartment. As is recorded in John 14, verse 2. John 14:2 says, "In my Father's house are many dwelling places. If it were not so, I would have told you, for I go to prepare a place for you." In the Hebrew tradition, the bridegroom would be apart from his bride for about 1 year. Although no one knew for sure how long before the bridegroom could return to claim his bride, only the bridegroom's father knew. It was the bridegroom's father that held the responsibility of making sure that all preparations were made and the apartment was finished, safe and ready for habitation. We can turn to Matthew 24:36. Matthew 24, verse 36, where it says, "But of that day and hour, no one knows, not even the angels of heaven, nor the Son, but the Father alone." Yeshua tells us that we are using the proper example here by telling us that only his Father knows the time of his return. When the time comes for Yeshua to return, we have yet another parallel. The tradition tells us that the bridegroom is accompanied by attendants, and that these attendants go before the bridegroom to alert the bride so that she might be ready when her husband arrives. Let's look at Matthew 25, verse 6, where it says, "But at midnight there was a shout, 'Behold, the bridegroom, come out to meet him.' And in 1 Thessalonians 4:16, it says, "For Yahweh himself will descend from heaven with a shout, with the voice of the archangel and with the trumpet of Elohim, and the dead in Messiah will rise first." This is the precise manner in which Master Yeshua will return for his bride. Having drawn these parallels, I might suggest that we could speculate about the condition of the bride when Yeshua returns. Today, half of the marriages end in divorce, just as the biblical example of the 10 virgins. Half were prepared and half were not. This is a statistic that tells of a society with no commitment, no substance. Half of the people of this society have not the commitment to a sacred relationship. The institution of marriage has gone the way of faithful obedience to Yahweh's word. Men and women of our modern society have not the fortitude to hold together a relationship, nor the willingness of that commitment. I pray that we are all ready to meet him when he returns, that we are not like the foolish virgins that have put off their preparations. Let's all remember the lesson of the 10 virgins and the relevance of the institution of marriage. We can all make plans to prepare for that day when Yeshua will return for his bride. While we wait, let's study the marriage contract and make sure that we are familiar with its terms. Let's be prepared for that day when we hear a great shout, "Behold, the bridegroom." Yahweh, help us to know his will.